Rainy.
Yes.
Okay.
It's cold here. Sorry, I totally forgot about it.
It's cold and rainy?
Yeah, it's cold and rainy.
Ew. That
I
sounds.
know. Just so unusual for us.
Yeah, that's very weird.
So yes, I got overalls today.
That is not the look I was expecting. Look like, you know, shoot. Oh, shoot. Crisscross, you know that like old hip hop
Yeah.
boys group, the Crisscross to make it jump, jump. I feel like that's what their outfits used to be. It'd be like a
I could see
hoodie and
that.
some overalls, or like they were also known for
With
like
like
wearing.
one unlatched and
Yeah, they would also wear like backwards pants, I think was there. So like the pockets would be in the front. That was their look. Which,
what
I
a
mean,
look.
I'm not mad at it. Like it probably worked, I guess. So.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to the finals of the 2022 NCAA Golf Championship. Make it memorable, gentlemen.
What's up and welcome to this week's edition of the Golf Stat Podcast. I am your host, Marcus L., and we got the full band back together. We got the lead singer, we got the drummer and guitarist. Which one of you wants to be the drummer?
Oh, me for sure.
Okay, so Carolyn's the drummer. We got Carolyn Kupchick back in the building. Ian, you can pick a different instrument if you want, but I feel like we kind of need, you know, we need some vocals. We need some rhythm with the drums. Are you cool with guitar or you want to play something different?
Yeah, that's fine. I can do guitar.
All
I can
right.
live with that.
That's perfectly fine. So a little trio here. We got Ian rocking the guitar. I am finally back home after 2+ weeks, just a little bit over 2 weeks in Scottsdale at our final year at Greyhawk. Shout out to Greyhawk first and foremost, just because it you know, for the complaints that some people have about the golf course, at the very least, they host a phenomenal event. They are terrific hosts. They got everything laid out. They don't leave anything unthought of. So like it really has been an enjoyable 3 years at Greyhawk. So big kudos to them, especially for like, this is the first year golf has had a host for 3 straight years, you know? So I feel like this was a good start for that kind of run of, you know, having championships at the same place for 3 years. So yeah, we didn't really cover in the last podcast. I think me and Ian recorded on a Wednesday while the matches were still going, which kind of speaks to maybe my thoughts about how the matches went in general. But let's just start with, you know, D1 Women's Championship. You know, obviously it's a long week. You get 4 rounds of stroke play, then you get quarterfinals and semifinals on Tuesday, and then you get finals on blah, 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 on Wednesday. Yeah. So Stanford does not win. Are we shocked? I'm just going to start there. So we'll say Wake Forest won, which obviously we will cover and talk about extensively. Kudos to Wake Forest, but we do have to start to talk about, are we shocked Stanford didn't win?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. I was on the Wake train for a while, so I'm okay with them not winning. I'm totally good with it. It's match play. You don't know what's going to happen. That's been the talk of Twitter, is, you know, is this the right format? Does this really show who the best team is? And I don't know. I mean, I think it's different between the men and the women in that argument, but because you have one. I mean, Florida wasn't the best team all year. You could argue Wake and Stanford were. That's what I'm saying is different.
Okay.
But no, I'm not surprised. I would have liked to have seen them make the championship, right? Everybody's been pushing this 1-2 narrative all year and would love to see them play head to head, but they ran into a good USC team, and I'm not shocked, but it was different for sure because they just win all the time. You know, it was a different feeling on that last day. Maybe made it a little anticlimactic, but that day we recorded, Marcus, but you know, I don't know. Are you shocked?
I'm not. And you brought up an important point of like just the variability of match play. I know Lance Ringler at Golf Week has been beating the drum for a long time of just about like the top seed never wins. And I don't think they ever have one, you know, as far as like winning stroke play and then getting through all the way through match play. It's never happened. So, I mean, I think that does kind of bear out that match play makes it a little bit more invariable as far as who, you know, if we want to say crowning the best team, I hate to knock anybody and say, you know, Wake's not the best team or Florida's not the best team, or even going back last year that Texas wasn't the best team or Finley wasn't the best team. You know, Carolyn, what are your thoughts? Do you think I don't know about, is there a problem with match play? Do you think it's a good way to decide a champion? Do you think do you think? Yeah. What are your thoughts on that whole topic there with match play? Open-ended question there. Sorry.
It's a lot. I don't know. It's tough because, you know, like Ian said, match play, anything can happen in match play. And I think it is a good question of whether or not that does the best team win. Because if it were more days of stroke play, I think Stanford would have won, but like hands down, like it wouldn't have been a question. And they have been ranked number one all year. So that's a tough question. I think it's more of a challenge though, which I think is nice, where in set, because I feel going into it again, we could have been like, if this were strictly stroke play, hands down Stanford. Maybe Wake would have gotten back up there and it would have been neck and neck, but most likely Stanford would have won. But you toss in match play in there and it's a different game and it makes it more challenging. And that gives you that you aren't going to be 100% sure on any of them. Just like in the men's, you're not 100% sure who is going to make it to that final. And like Wake, not knocking Wake, it's a great, they're a great team. And they, you know, they've been second for, I think, most of this year. So it's not surprising that they would win either in that match play. But I think it definitely gives you a good challenge. It's kind of like March Madness, too, in a sense. You never know who's going to win. And usually the number one seed doesn't win there either. So
it's funny you bring up the March Madness thing, because I think it is a very like somewhat similar comparison. Like we've had plenty of March Madness basketball tournaments or whatever of the little bit that I do watch, but I watched a lot growing up and even like in previous years recently, where like the best team all year does not win a championship. Like it's pretty regular that happens. I always think about, for our hardcore basketball fans out there, college basketball fans, there was a Kentucky team that I think was like 31-0, 32-0.
Yep.
And they like all the way to the championship game, and then they lost to Wisconsin.
They beat Wisconsin in the they lost in the Final Four to Wisconsin, not even in the championship.
That's what it was. They lost in the Final Four because I remember Frank Kaminsky was on that team and so on and so forth.
And it was Notre Dame in the Elite Eight on a buzzer beater.
Yes.
That was a heartbreaker.
Yes. Yeah. When you've just got a series of these like one and done kind of situations, mm-hmm. right? We're not using, as we always talk about, big data sets, right? Like anything can happen in one game. Anything can happen in one match. Any one of your players or teams can lose if you really only have to be good for 15 holes. Right. Or whatever mm-hmm. it may be. Right. Like as we saw with Rose, like especially, you know, because that's the other point about this, too. Right. They get there on Wednesday for a walkthrough. They play a practice round on Thursday. They play four rounds of stroke play. Then they play quarterfinal on Tuesday morning, semifinal on Tuesday afternoon. That Tuesday afternoon round probably is the hardest round ever, just because
you're exhausted.
Exhausted. And honestly, and I don't, just by me judging what was on the TV coverage, there was a lot of, to me, what looked like tired swings from Rose. You know what I mean? And that's, again, that's not a criticism at all, but it really did just look like she was tired. You know what I mean? Like just a lot of golf. And again, especially when you are Rose, which means you're not just going to play golf, right? You're accepting the Annika Award. You're doing this interview. You're doing this with Golf Channel. You know what I mean? Like it's a whole lot more than just showing up, playing golf, hitting the range afterwards, and then going back to the hotel and chilling for the rest of the afternoon. She's got all these different things going on. So yeah, as far as like the grind and just the grueling task that it is to play all of those rounds well, probably contributed, I would think. I did find interesting when we talk about, you know, what produces the best team. So if we look at our stroke play leaderboard, Stanford is up by five after 72 holes, right? Again, it's not always a perfect case, but to me, after 72 holes, typically the best teams rise to the top. And you see it here kind of just, again, just on this leaderboard, the only team. So Mississippi State and LSU were literally the only two teams. And you can throw San Jose State in there too, but like that didn't make it in the top eight. Other than that, you've got, they're all top 11, top 10 teams, except for Pepperdine, right? So your best seeds prevailed in that one. If you look over on the men's side, very similar. There's only, it's funny that they're the same seed, but the 16th seed or ranked team, I should say, Virginia, was the only team not inside the top 11 here, that the inside the top eight. You still got Stanford there that just barely missed out on a tiebreak, and then obviously Vandy being the one that was somewhat of a disappointment. Other than that, as we can see, 72 holes kind of did identify who the best 8, 9, 10 teams in the country are, right? So there is, like you said, I think there is an argument to be made that, yeah, over a long or a pretty decent amount of stroke play, you're going to identify who the best teams are. Once you get to match play, it becomes a little bit more unpredictable. Which leads me to my next question. Does it devalue a national championship at all to you? Like, does it mean less? Because don't you, or so I guess my question, okay, so let me rephrase it this way. For a national championship, do we feel like we want to identify the best team or are we looking for excitement and fun and so on and so forth? What should be the main goal of a national championship here when we're handing out a trophy? Who had the best week? Who had the best year? Identifying the best team. What's the goal? Take your time. I know there's a lot. There's a big thought here. Big thought.
I don't know. I don't know. It's a loaded question. Like you.
It is.
Like you can't. I don't know. It's just like, because it gives that feeling of, if it's just four rounds of stroke play, it feels like any other tournament throughout the year.
Is that a bad thing?
No. I'm just saying, like, that's the feeling that you would get from that, right? Like, it wouldn't feel different. It wouldn't feel like a national championship.
Because I think that's Lance's argument. We play 54 whole stroke play every other event, except for, again, like, you're, and they're only, honestly, the only reason these conferences do match play during the regular season is because the finals do it. Like, we didn't have any of those match play tournaments from Big 10, Big 12, SEC until the finals went to match play, right? So, you know, Lance's argument always is, the standard format, just about every week, is 54 holes of stroke play. Why do we decide the best team a different way once we get to championship? So, Carolyn, I'll throw it to you too. What do you think? Should we be deciding the national championship a different way? Do you think it makes the national championship, I don't want to say less, but feel different than if we don't identify the best team, or that kind of thing?
I'm sorry. What was the question?
Sorry, I said a lot of things. I did. I said a lot of things. Do you feel like the format that we currently use for a national championship kind of devalues the national championship if we're not consistently identifying the best team, if we're using a format that is very invariable?
I guess for me, kind of going a little bit back to the question of the whole match play, I think it's more for excitement. Personally, I feel like that portion is kind of like, because you don't know, it is so, I don't know if it like necessarily devalues it, but I mean, it is a good point of how every other tournament you're choosing the winner by just rounds of stroke play. You're not tossing in a match play there, unless obviously, I mean, there are a few tournaments out there that they do have match play towards the end, but typically, like you say, it's just stroke play. But so for me, I feel like having that match play, it's feels like it's more for an excitement because you just don't know. Because clearly, like I said before, like Stanford would have won stroke play, hands down. But in match play, anything can happen, and they didn't win. So,
yeah.
But I don't know if it necessarily like Diva. I don't know.
Last year, though, like, I don't know if you can call it an anomaly, but like, they still won. The best team for the women's side still won. So it's like, it's not impossible for that to happen. Like, it's not. And so I feel like that in itself gives credence to the fact that there's still, like, you can still have entertainment, but you can and should, depending on how dominant a team is, have those teams rise to the top. Like, it's still, I think this year was odd for them because of the injuries. And I'm not saying that played a factor in a match play, like, because they still won stroke play. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't all of a sudden. I mean, but fatigue is a real thing. Like you said, that second round on that semifinal round is, I mean, you look at Brooke Say, hadn't played golf in 6 months or whatever it is. And now she's playing six rounds in 5 days. It's like, that's a real thing. And, you know, maybe if she is healthy, that changes. And, you know, I don't know. Or maybe if there's an extra day where they get more rest, like, who knows? I don't know. I know what TV windows they don't have choices that they can make with that. But I think that's something that can also be factored into it as well on the women's side, at least the last 2 years. So,
yeah. And plus two, it's a second ranked team still end up winning.
And honestly, to me, that was like the best part about it. Like, not to say like the good guys won, but like Stanford already got one. All right. They already won last year. They got three in a row individual champions. Individual champions on their team with Rachel Heck winning 3 years ago, I guess, and then Rose winning back to back. Wake has been the second, third, fourth, whatever best team in the country for the last 3 years. So, can I make a basketball reference again? Is that okay?
Go ahead.
Sure. All right. So
we'll allow it.
Thanks. So it's almost like the Warriors dynasty. Like the Warriors or Stanford. And they go on that run where they're just reeling off championship after championship after championship. And because they're so good, nobody else can win, even though there's other good teams in the league. Right. So this to me was almost like the year LeBron won, where like they have the second best team. And if it wasn't for the Warriors, he probably would have had two or three championships. It's nice that that Wake, with this run with the roster that they've had in this 3-4 year window, whatever, of this current roster, was able to get one, because we don't know how long that will last, right? We don't know how long they'll have this current roster. Obviously, with Amelia, I think officially moving on at this point, right? Like, this roster could be different in a year or two from now. So for them to have this 3 or 4 year run, be able to walk away from that saying, okay, this group of players did get a national championship. If anything, to me, that was a plus, you know, that they were rewarded for how good they've been over the last 3 years, I would say. So that was worth it. What about some other teams? Just leaderboard wise, any reactions to stroke play portion, match play? I didn't do picks with Ian. I did picks with Jordan at the time. I think I was 4-for-8 on my match play picks. I think Jordan may have been 5-for-8. So 50% is not bad. Were there any surprise? I mean, Mississippi State, LSU not making match play. Did that surprise?
No, because of how they played in regionals, it didn't surprise me.
Okay.
It's a trend. I mean,
for LSU or Mississippi State? Because I feel
for
like
LSU. For LSU. Yeah. Yeah. For LSU, not for Mississippi State. Because they won their regional, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say. For LSU, that's the one that was like, took you till the 17th or 18th hole on the final round to get through, which is great. But at the same time, like, what level of confidence do you have bringing into that? You see Ingrid, she was in the mix late, but Latana didn't really follow suit. Everybody after, that was not surprising to me. Sure. It's obviously surprising seeing the number three team as the last ranked team on that top leaderboard of the advancing teams. Like, that's weird to see. But if you know kind of the track record of, I won't say track record, the recency of their performances, you could understand.
Yeah, it was kind of stinky that, and again, I still don't know if I've seen anything about Ingrid graduating or going pro yet. So like maybe
we went through this last year too, though, trying to figure out if she was going to go pro or what. So,
maybe she's coming back for a ninth season. I really don't know. But yeah, it's kind of stinky that if this was Ingrid's last year, because that's another one, I just talked about Wake. It'd be nice, or it was nice that they, I won't say ended this run, but that they got out of here with the national championship for the roster they had. It would have been nice, not necessarily for LSU as a whole, even though obviously that would be cool, but for Ingrid to walk away with some, like, I was really rooting for her to win the individual championship, honestly. Just
she was still T5.
Yeah, but it's not a dub. We want to hold the big trophy at the end, right? We want to hold the big trophy. Yeah, it was a great showing for her, but yeah, I was hoping that maybe this could have been, again, a coronation for her as possibly could be going pro sometime soon. Yeah, other than that, I feel like it was kind of not really a surprising match play. Obviously, you got Stanford, Wake. Look at where South Carolina is on the board, which is so funny. Fourth ranked team, fourth seeding. Let me pull the rankings, see if they ended up the year. They did. They ended the year fourth. Heck yeah. Good for them. So they ended the year fourth in rankings as well. Just always fourth.
It'll never change.
Just forever. Southern California obviously putting it together as well, and they made a deep run in match play. Florida State was really impressive, because they have got some young players on their squad. Texas A&M Lottie in Road. There exactly Texas A&M in there, which I was not surprised. They were a team that I was thinking, hey, as long as they get to match play, they could probably make some noise. But I feel like the board was pretty straightforward, right? Maybe Pepperdine, right, would have been the maybe surprise, but they played well all week, right? 295, 270. But
look at the teams that were like directly behind them. Like, you would have had Like, even Mississippi State was still 5 shots out. So the teams that were 2 and 3 were, even higher ranked than they were. So,
yeah. So that, kudos to them. Let's hop over to the match play portion of it. We kind of talked a little bit already about, before I go further, Let's go ahead and wrap it up on Rose. Okay, we kind of have to, because she is officially turning pro. I need to check the leaderboard.
She's leaving the end. All right, that's
is that the end of it? is there nothing more to say? Are we? Let's just do you? And again, we all have somewhat limited knowledge on the history of college golf. But in your mind, is she the greatest ever to do it? Amateur, college? What would you think?
Men or women or both?
Just all of it.
It's tough to match up with some guys, but I mean, the fact she did what she did in 2 years is pretty insane. I think that's the thing, man. It's nuts. Yeah. And she's also one back right now, at the Mizuno or Mizuho, whatever it is.
You said she's one back.
She's one back. Yeah.
That's so filthy. I had a text with a buddy of mine that was saying, he's like, hey, I didn't realize Rose turned, and he's not a, it's awesome because I feel like he's paying attention to amateur and college golf a little bit more just because he's my friend and he's listened to the podcast a few times. So he's like, I've heard you mention Rose's name. I didn't realize she turned pro. And he was like, he was trying to say, is there a comparison to that with like any other sport or like with basketball? Because me and him are pretty big basketball fans. I was like, yeah, imagine like LeBron went to college and he just won March Madness. Like his team just won the NCAA March Madness bracket. Then 7 days later, he puts up 32-9-9 like in his first regular season game. Like that's essentially what Rose is doing. She literally just won a national championship 7, 8, 9 days ago, whatever it was, right? And now, or I guess 2 weeks ago, maybe at this point. And now she's already contending in a in her first pro start as a professional. Let me put that caveat in there. Like, again, like I think we are underestimating, as much as we already have talked glowingly about her, I think we still kind of over or like understate how ridiculous it is what she's doing. You know what I mean? It's pretty crazy. So in my mind, I have her as the GOAT. I don't really need to see anybody else's resume. I don't care. No, I'm not.
I feel like someone did compare her to somebody. And
Lorena Ochoa is the one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm not going to call them old heads, even though I just backhandedly called them old heads. But, you know, Lorena is the one, is the standard, at least in women's golf, because she went on a ridiculous one run where I think, you know, I think Berko is the one that always says the number where like she only lost to three people that year or something like that and wrote off a bunch of wins. You know me, I'm more of a how good was your competition kind of deal. And like to me, like when they lay out the scoring averages of your competition, you know, Rose is playing against better players to me at this point, which speaks to the advancement of college golf and especially women's college golf. So to win, you know, whatever it was 9 times in 11 events or 12 events this year, whatever it is, like against this competition to me is a little bit more impressive. Not to mention, again, Lorena wasn't doing, to my knowledge, was not doing Golf Channel interviews at the time, did not have NIL deals, was not, you know, having people pull her from left and right as she's trying to do this. You know, so to me, that is the other part that's so impressive in the day and age of social media and all this different media hype and so on and so forth. To still do that to me is that puts you in the. And again, back-to-back national championships, you know, like that's the other part. Like it'd be different. I can't say different, but like you won back-to-back national championships. Like the only person that's done that, men's or women's, it's like Crenshaw. And then maybe didn't Billy Ray Brown do it? Like, I feel like they kept showing that on the broadcast.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
So like, other than that, like there's nobody wins back-to-back national championships as an individual. And that's really hard to do. So, all right. So Rose is the GOAT. That's what I think we're all in agreement. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. We're in agreement. Good. So we get to quarterfinal matches. And we had some fun. Stanford played Pepperdine. I feel like we stayed pretty regional, didn't we?
Yeah. So
we got Texas versus Texas A&M, which was fun. We got Stanford versus Pepperdine in the California school battle. We got Wake Forest versus Florida State in the SEC or ACC battle. And then we got the battle over who's the real USC between Southern California and South Carolina. And the dream for me was ended very quickly as USC took care of USC, and I could not get the fourth ranked team to be the first best team at the end of the championship.
They probably still would have stayed fourth even if they won.
They probably would have. So that was fun to me. I think the good part for me was like I didn't really have, maybe except for one, didn't really have anybody I was rooting against. You know, like,
are you sure? Anyways,
you know, really rooting for Texas A&M and Coach G, you know, Stanford, Pepperdine, you know, Coach, I think it's Lori Gibbs. I think hopefully I'm saying that right or remembering the name correctly, but she's done a fine job this year. So I mean, I would have been rooting for her. Wake Forest, obviously, we talked about Amy Bond and her program, really like to see them do well. And then again, the two USC as well. So there was really no like. I was just excited to watch them. Again, I think the intrigue was Stanford going to pull it off? Because the way the bracket worked out as well was we would have seen a Stanford and Wake Forest final. Like it looked like it was going to happen. Now, obviously, USC crashed the party. The Southern California crashed the party. But it did look like at that point that we were going to see that, you know, and then obviously that's just, you know, that's not what happened. Stanford took care of business against Pepperdine. Wake Forest took care of business as well. And then we moved on to semifinals. And Stanford, again, to me, just didn't look like they had enough in the tank. So then we get Wake Forest. I know I'm zooming through this and I haven't given you all a chance to talk, but I figured we'd get there eventually. let's put a bow on Wake Forest season. Ian, you were early on the Wake Forest hype. Do you feel what's the word? Do you feel vindicated? Do you feel accomplished? Do you feel correct? Like, what's the proper term here?
I don't know. It's hard because like they were so like, it's not like you picked the 15th best team like I did. Like I picked the 15th best team and they won, you know, and it's like everybody doubted you, whatever. Like, no, like they were this number two ranked team from September 1, whatever it is. We did the first ranking all the way through this past week. So vindicated? No. Is it? I just was trying to like go against the grain, I think, just because they've been so close and I was trying to will them to actually get it done by supporting them. Not that that really had any say on what they did, but mind.
They needed one more supporter, Ian.
One more supporter.
All they needed was one.
That was really what I was trying to do there, is just talk, like speak it into existence, and somehow it worked. But no, it's good. It's good to see. Obviously, Stanford still did their thing in stroke play, won another individual national championship. We already talked about that, but no, it was good to see. I would have, like I said earlier, I would have liked to have seen a Stanford Wake final, but you can't have everything. So, but yeah, it was good. I feel good.
And you know, and that's why we ended up recording last Wednesday, because like, no offense to USC, but like I felt pretty early on that, not that it wasn't going to last long, but I thought it was going to be, you know, they were going to take care of business handily, and they did. You know, it was 4-2 for Amelia. Rachel King won 6-4. Walsh won 3-2, and then another match was 2-16 when everything was over. So I mean, like, it wasn't really that close in the final day either. So good for, I mean, that's a good for them kind of thing, right? Like, good for Wake that they could really celebrate. You know, it wasn't a nail biter necessarily. Like, it was more of a march down the fairway, celebrate while you're doing it kind of deal, which is cool for them. That's a good way to end it. Carolyn, anything? Are you ready to hop over to men's?
No, we can hop over to men's.
Let's hop over to men's. All right. So completely different vibe as we get to the men's championship. It's just different, man. As soon as, like, I swear that when they like show up for the walkthrough and check in and practice round, like the vibe just shifts. We always talk about like you feel like you got to like stand at attention. You just got to stand up a little bit straighter, fix your collar, because, you know, the men's coaches are here. You know, just get, for some reason, it's just like, oh, man, I'm going to make another bad reference. But you guys seen Harry Potter, right?
No.
Yes.
Ian, you haven't seen Harry Potter?
Never seen any of them or read the books.
Do you know what a Dementor is?
No.
Oh my gosh, Ian.
I only know it from that episode of The Office where Michael's prison Mike and he says the worst part of prison, which are the Dementors. And okay, he's like, you mean from Harry Potter? Like, he was making up the whole thing. So no, I do not know what that is.
Okay. So the Dementors essentially are like, yeah, they're like prison guards essentially, but they're like these spirit soul looking things. They dress in all black and they just suck your soul, right? That's essentially okay. What they do. They look at you and they just... I think the way they describe it is like they just take all the happiness out of your soul. Right. Okay. So love you, men's coaches. But when you show up, there's not a whole lot of happiness in the building.
Yeah.
So again, sucks it all just, right out.
All the happiness is gone.
All business.
All business when they walk in for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe they just, yeah, the vibe is just different sometimes. All right. But anyways, it was a phenomenal championship. I would say this was probably my favorite of the three that have been at Greyhawk, was the men's championship. Like, it just had it. And maybe it's because I can't say I had a dog in the fight, but like, I was absolutely rooting for Florida, especially as it became more realistic that they had a chance to actually win it. I was absolutely rooting for Florida, you know, so that was really cool. But let's get right into it. As far as results go, again, we talked about all the stuff from stroke play to match play. We don't need to cover that again. Any reactions stroke play wise? Yeah, any reaction stroke play wise? You know, you got everybody up there. Like, and maybe this is the fun part about the men's side. Like, there was a bunch of favorites, right? So Carolina, Florida, Illinois, Pepperdine, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Virginia, Arizona State, and then Stanford just barely misses out again in another playoff. And then Vandy barely missing. So like, the only surprise.
Wait, really? Barely?
What?
Barely missing?
Yeah.
They're plus 21. And then plus 12 was...
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Sorry, not to like cut, but I'm in close. I don't know. Maybe if
I was
you're
just,
like
I was just looking at, you know, T8 and then they were 11th. So they were only two spots out. But yes, they were nine shots behind. You are correct. Yeah. You're correct. That's a decent correction. So let me put it this way. Any thoughts on Vandy? Like, we can go there first. I titled a podcast earlier in spring, I think it was, about if you have three quarterbacks, do you have one? Or if you have two quarterbacks, do you have one? I always kind of not worried me, but just like their lineup continued to change, at least at the five spot. And I just didn't know how well that would translate. I don't know if that was necessarily the issue here. Like, I don't think, let me pull up scores here. I mean, Gordon didn't play great either, which definitely doesn't help, you know, for him to be T40. So that may have been more of the issue. But I mean, I'm guessing you guys were surprised, right? That Vandy didn't make it to match play.
Yeah,
I mean,
for
I
sure.
was, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, too, that you mentioned the five spot, and the five spot finished the highest. Cole Sherwood at T29.
Exactly. Yeah. So, again, talking out the side of my mouth and hoping it ends up right later. And yeah, they five guy played just fine. I think, if anything, like, it's just weird how the calendar works, because, like, from a college and like when it's good to be the best team in the country, because a lot of people start talking about Vanderbilt at the like middle of spring last season, right, is when they really started to go on a run. And I think they just didn't get it done in match play last year, but they were the best team in the country starting middle of spring last year. And that run kind of ran out about the same time this year, you know, if we're looking at it. So it's just, it's almost like if that calendar and that peak time had just started later last year and ended later this year, we maybe not be talking about it, but maybe the run just ended a little bit too soon, you know, because they had honestly been at that level since last spring. And that's a long time to expect to be at that level for a year and a half. You know what I mean? So it may have just ran out. I thought the stroke play portion was really interesting, just, you know, between who was day one leader, day two leader, day three leader, all of that, because you saw a little bit of everything. Pepperdine was up there for a while. Georgia Tech was up there for a while. You had Florida up there for a while. And then you had UNC end up on top. Thoughts on Carolina before we get into match play? Does anybody have anything before I say anything about Carolina?
We'll let you go.
Did you know that they bring four players back?
I did, from talking to you and also on Twitter, seeing that guys are coming back. I did see that.
Yeah, and for some, and, you know, I had almost painted this as like, which I think most thought it was, that this
the
was
last
kind of,
hurrah. That
exactly.
They,
yeah. Like, this was kind of going to be their, like, because Minetti, I thought, was leaving. Greaser, I thought, was for sure leaving. And then I thought between Burnett and Fountain that either both were leaving or were graduating, or one of them. But it seems like the only one that is leaving, and I get them all both mixed up, but one of Fountain or Burnett is leaving. He's graduated. But they get Minetti back, Greaser back, and Greaser sounds to be like, his wrist injury, I think it was, just never really healed the way it was supposed to this spring. And instead of taking his exemptions now while he's injured, he's like, hey, let me just come back to school, fully heal, and then use my exemptions next year so I can actually get off to a good start pro career instead of chancing that while I'm injured. So that, yeah, to me, that sounds like that sounds like a smart thing for him. So that means you get Greaser back, Minetti back, Ford is not leaving. And then again, one of Burnett or Fountain is staying. And then next year it's the same four, and we just got to see who's maybe could step up from a five guy standpoint. I would think they're a good enough team, and, you know, DiBattista and Clarkey have been recruiting to the point that, like, they probably got somebody coming if they're not already on the roster, but coming in next year. So they should be fine.
I wouldn't be surprised if you see a transfer either.
I wouldn't.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a transfer either. That's very.
It's gonna have this similar vibe to what Oklahoma was doing. Like, they didn't, you know, when they got her up, and
what if they get Ian Gilligan?
I
just want to throw that out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
would he be an asset?
He'd be an asset.
I'm just asking.
Sorry, that sounded like a disrespectful question.
That was so. You were so quick to be like, "Hey, what?"
I thought that was a disrespectful question.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and again, I think there are questions to be asked about, you know, how would he fit in an elite program? Because, yep, you know, no disrespect to Long Beach State, but that is not the same as North Carolina. But I think what we have seen, you know, is that he plays well when all the other really good players are there too. Like, his, again, we kept trying to see, okay, is he still going to finish top 10 or whatever when all the best players are there? And we've seen it, you know? So, like, I think I don't know if fit in is the right word, but he could definitely play at that level. You know what I mean? So it will be interesting, because I think he is in the transfer portal. I could be completely wrong, but I thought I heard some rumors about him transferring at some point.
Yeah.
Then, like, it would be interesting to see what that means from a fit perspective of, you know, with the rest of the program, wherever he goes. But yeah, that would be
the opposite coast.
I know, it would be the absolute opposite coast. Yes, man. That would be the opposite coast. But yeah, that would be an interesting one to watch. So yeah, and we'll get to kind of the actual golf a little bit down the road as we get to the match play. But overall, not as disappointed that they didn't win, seeing that they do get four back. But man, they were close. And again, we'll talk about that match later. Illinois, what do you think, Ian? Both stroke play and match play.
I mean, they were one of the best teams all year and showed it in stroke play. I mean, they set the record at one point for lowest round, and then Pepperdine came back and just smashed it the next day, I think, right? Is that what it was? 273, and then Pepperdine came in, fired 269 the next day. So, yeah. I mean, like, if we're going to touch on match play, like, your two first-team All-Americans won their match handily, and you just needed one of your other three to win, and it didn't happen. Like, that's the – yeah. They're the only team in the country with two first-team All-Americans. Yeah. Both those guys win their match 3-2. And, you know, they just – I don't know. It was – Pearson struggled all week. Matisse, you know, this is his first time. He went to Southern Illinois for 4 years, so he's this big-time situation. I'm not saying that this is me – projecting and right. thinking this is nothing I know, or this is not an indictment on him, but like, it's the first big time, you know what I mean? Like, you come in, you play Big Ten championship, there ain't cameras around there, you know what I mean? Like, there's, and now you're here on this stage, and he struggled a little bit. Jackson, man, he kind of he had a great week, almost won a national, almost, you know, was in the mix for a playoff if at the end of that round for the national championship, if Fred had made bogey or whatever it was on that last hole. So like, he was looking good. And then a couple bad shots down the stretch, he holes out of that bunker shot and, you know, give you life, but then goes, you know, way right on the tee shot on the next hole. So it's just, you just need a 1 point from one of those three guys and couldn't get it. And it sucks because the narrative on social media from a lot of Illini fans is very anti Mike Small right now. And it's, which is very unfortunate, stupid. That it is that way. Yeah.
Don't be that guy, or don't be that guy or gal. Right. Like, yeah. you.
And it's a lot of people that don't have their faces on their social media, which sure. is obvious how this yeah. day and age works. But it's a lot of like comparison to other coaches at Illinois in their history for other sports of you know, like, yeah,
of other sports.
Yeah. It's like, what's his name? The basketball coach with, that was at K-State. I can't remember what his name.
I know
was,
who you're talking about.
I lost to UNC, and you yeah. know, it's like, we had this team, you know, whatever. And just comparisons of that and just how they can't get it done. And it's like, well, the guys won 13 of the last 14 or 14 of the last 15 Big Ten championships. Like, he's made match play more than any other coach, I think, since match play has been integrated. You know, so it's just like, yes, it sucks. You can't get over the hump, especially for like diehard Illini fans, and like which I'm not one of. But like, no, I'm really not. Like, I've gotten to know those guys, so like, that's been great. But like, I've lived in Illinois the majority of my life, and never once have I, aside from their run at the national tournament for basketball in 05 when everybody was a fan. But you know, it just sucks. Like I said, you had they're the only school in the country with two first team All-Americans. They both win their match. You just needed one other point, couldn't get it. And yeah. that's just kind of is what
and
it
they
is.
They were all so close.
Yeah.
Like, it's yeah. obviously.
Hunts, I think Matisse missed three or four, like, 7 to 9 footers for birdie or par to win holes down the stretch in the last six holes. I think he had three or four holes where he missed those short putts that could have won his match. And like, you look back and it's like, well, what if he did, you know, you can look back on everything, but it was the recency bias of like, he had a chance to win it on three of the last four holes and it didn't get done. And that's just what happens sometimes. And then he went to the last hole, you know.
I think it's so funny. First of all, Mike Small's job is safe.
Yeah, I don't think you gotta worry about that.
I think he's good. But I always, even with fan bases, I always, and this goes just about for every sport, you always have to say, okay, if we were, who would we get that's better?
Yeah, right? No, that's 100% and I think, right.
I don't know if there are any better than Mike Small. And even if they are, they're probably already at a program and very happy with where they're at. You know what I mean? So like, unless you're finding unless you're going from Pat Riley to Eric Spoelstra, right? Where you find the next young guy, da 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 da, like, yeah.
But who did Eric Spoelstra exactly. learn under?
Right. Pat like Riley. You're not upgrading from Mike Small very often, if ever.
No.
You know, so I think we're
not immediately, at least.
Not immediately. Absolutely. No. So I think Illinois is fine. Again, like you said, match play is very invariable. They also played a really good team. So yeah. like
there was three different options they could have played and it all would have been brutal. You know what I mean? Like, there was three or four different places they could have gone. It sucks because you lose. You're only bringing back two guys next year for them. Like, that's a team that's might struggle a little bit. Just because you lose the veteran leadership and skill of Tommy and Adrian, and then Matisse is a one and done because he's a transfer. So you bring back Jackson and Pearson, but that's it. And so kind of have to regroup. Hopefully the recruiting is good. Maybe pick somebody out of the portal if you can. You see kind of what you can do to try to regroup from there. So
what if Ian Gilligan goes to Illinois?
I don't know. I just feel like Long Beach, California, and Champaign, Illinois don't really mix. I'll tell you that right now. So
okay, whatever the next program is, I'll bring up his name again. Don't you worry. Okay.
Perfect. That's all I got on Illinois.
All right. Can I shout out my Buckeyes for 30 seconds?
You in the last time we did this, you were like, they ain't going to make it. They ain't going to make this.
And listen, did they prove me wrong? Did you see how they proved me wrong? So I the whole time was like, all right, you know, something to watch from a statistic standpoint is you're typically not going to see late flurries of birdies to make the cut. Unlike the women's event. The women's event, you'd see people.
There's two par fives. Or yeah, exactly. The 18th hole's a par five. Yeah.
Exactly. And even if you finish on the front, like those aren't really birdie holes on 7, 8, 9, whatever, right?
Number eight, depending on where that pin is brutal.
Exactly.
Yeah, that par three.
But Ohio State, just outside of the cut, they use, make sure I'm looking at the right round here. Yeah, birdie from Max on 9, and then Shipley went 3 in a row on 6, 7, 8. Did end up bogeying 9, but they literally played those two players essentially played the last however many holes and 3 under in order for them to make the or to get into a playoff to make the cut, to make the 15 cut. So that was pretty cool.
Against the number, what were they, 3 team in the country at the time?
Yep, against Texas Tech.
4, 5 teams.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So big shout out to my Buckeyes, to Max, to Shipley. Shipley was in contention to win in the final day, but just kind of ran out of gas on day 4. But a real good showing for him. And, I'm sure he's probably got a bright future as a Buckeye. So that was really cool to see for them to make it to that final day. You know, I saw Jay and I was like, hey, man, you got a tee time for Monday. That's all you can ask for, right? You got your names on the tee sheet. So that was pretty cool. All right, let's head over to match play and we'll run through that real quick. Again, I will preface this by saying that to me, this was the most like fun matches because all of these teams were like, they could probably win a national championship. Like maybe Virginia was the only team that we didn't necessarily believe in, maybe. But I mean, if you look at how their matches went, Patel won, Lee won, and then Ben James is the one that didn't win, or one of the ones that didn't win, and that's their best player. So I mean, if he beats Castillo, then maybe we're talking about something different. Okay,
but Yushin was down big too,
right?
And won three or four straight holes. Like it could have been over for them early.
Exactly. So yeah. I looked at this match play. It's like this was one of those ones where, and not only, you know, me and you, but all the SIDs on site and everything too were like, okay, if this tiebreaker happens, who do we play? Because every seeding was going to be so important. You know, like when I saw UNC playing Arizona State, I was like, oh boy, like you don't want to play the home team, right? Even though they were the A seed, like they're better than the A seed. You don't want to have to deal with that. Okay, are we going to be on the same side of the bracket? Or when I say we, but just as a team, whoever that team is, are we going to be on the same side of the bracket as Georgia Tech, right? Because Georgia Tech was really hot. Same with Pepperdine, right? So all of these matches were really, really good. I think if you notice too, is something to notice with the women, there were a lot of the women's matches, like there were matches still out on the golf course, right? Where somebody had won 3 matches and then the final match was considered unfinished, right? I think there was only one match that was like that for the men, which is this UNC and Arizona State match. Other than that, I think every single match, all 5 matches finished, which goes to show you just how close all of these were. Okay, so in the first round, Florida advances over UVA. UNC beat the home team. Illinois loses to Florida State. We kind of covered that too. But again, Florida State, really good team. So, I mean, no surprise there, really. And then Georgia Tech and Pepperdine kind of fighting for that, you know, who's the hot team right now. And Georgia Tech really did prove to be the hot team, which kind of takes me to semifinals here. Where did you all watch the UNC Georgia Tech final and just kind of how that match ended?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Okay. So this is essentially what happened, right? UNC was down for like just about all of these matches, not all of, Minetti did his thing.
I was going to say, besides Dylan, yeah, that was really Minetti, all over. Yeah.
He took care of business. Burnett and Greaser were essentially out of it for most of it. Ford went on a little late run, held his 1-up lead, and he ended up winning. The interesting one was the Fountain match because, let's see, I think it was he made a long birdie on 14, lipped out on 15, okay, but then he was back to even, if I'm not mistaken.
He was still one down, it looks like. Still,
okay, so he was one down on after 15. So then on 16, because Steelman was, he was getting hot. So essentially what was, like, on 16, Fountain hit his in the front bunker, Steelman's over the back. Fountain hits his bunker shot to like a foot. Steelman's got like 25 feet for par. And you're thinking, all right, this is where Fountain flips it. Now we got a tied match going into 17 and 18. Anything can happen. Steelman drains the birdie drains the par, the 25 footer for par. All right, let's move on to 17. Fountain pipes one up there on the green to like, I'm pretty sure he hit his on the green was pretty close or whatever. If not, it was just a wedge shot short. And then Steelman laid up, hit his wedge shot to maybe 30 feet, something like that, right? Boom, Steelman makes another putt from 30 feet for birdie. Now Fountain's got like a 7-footer just to even extend the match. And that one barely goes in. They're like, oh my gosh, we just went from Fountain might win 14, 16, 17 to he's still one down on 18. How is this happening? You know what I mean? So it was just like literally any one of those putts doesn't go in for Steelman. And we are talking about UNC going to a final against Florida. You know what I mean? So it all could have flipped just like that if it wasn't for those putts that dropped at the end for Steelman. But it was, again, that was even
and
though
especially for him. And I know they didn't end up winning, but like for Ross to the way it ended for him individually the day before on those same holes to go back and hit clutch putts to get your team to a national championship, like that's some serious resolve and some serious growth, like mentally from where you were the day before to be able to finish the way they did or what he did.
And then you get Florida too. Obviously they look it, you know, it looked like it was pretty simple taking care of business against, I think it was Florida State here, right? Yeah. Against Florida State. But all of those matches were close, you know, Biondi, Dubois, all of those were really close. And then I just think it's so awesome that JC puts out Castillo last in just about all these matches because that's the emotional guy and that's the guy you want fighting, right? Like
it a little bit the next day.
Absolutely. But that's what you want, man. That's what match plays for. You kind of want the guy that like wants it too bad. You know what I mean? Like you really kind of want that. And he went out there and balled in that playoff. You know, it was so funny. I think the clinching putt that he won, JC was on the broadcast. He was like, what did you tell him? And I guess he goes up and Castillo was like, no, coach, I got it.
Yeah, that's what he said. He's like, nah, I'm good.
I got it. And then, you know, doesn't take much time and then just drains it. Big fist pump, teammates run over. And again, that's why it was so fun to see that emotion, so on and so forth. So then we get to the final and it's Florida and why'd I keep clicking on the wrong tab? It's Florida and Georgia Tech. Again, I'm nervous. I can't say nervous because whatever, but like two coaches that both deserve to get one, in my opinion, right? Like, you can't be mad either way. Obviously, I won't say I was rooting for Florida, but I was rooting for Florida because we had JC on the podcast. I'd been following this team for 2 years. It was a pick, if you will, of mine from the beginning where I was like, man, this team could be hot if they get everybody playing, you know, da-da-da-da. And here they are, right? And they ended up taking care of business and, to me, was one of the more exciting, thrilling matches, team matches. And it was just, you know, it was just cool to see. You know, I listened to my interview with JC that morning as I was waiting for tea time to go off just to kind of see if I could learn anything or get some insight, some foreshadowing into. And he just, you know, he talked about his players. Like that was the thing that I kept going back to, just how much he talked about his players, about Fred, about Ricky, about Yushin, and just how much they mean to the program and what they've been building, about guys like Matthew Kress, or I think it's Matthew, but Kress, that, you know, essentially was told no. And he said, nah, coach, I'm playing here. You know, like I'm going to walk on. Like I'm going to earn a spot, and to have him be a pivotal key or a pivotal member of that team, both at SECs, you know, throughout the season, but also here, that was really cool to see all of that pay off in the end. What were you guys' thoughts? Just maybe on the just to kind of wrap up the men's championship. Did it feel that exciting at home? Did it feel like Florida was a deserving champion? What were you guys' thoughts?
I mean, I was definitely clicking the refresh. I no longer had a TV to watch, so I wasn't watching it. But I was like,
Carolyn's in the wilderness.
I was just clicking that refresh button. I do think it's really awesome that kind of like Stanford last year, where Rose won and then they won the national title. Fred won individual and then Florida ends up bringing it home. I thought that was pretty awesome.
It was. Yeah, that part was really cool, too. Yeah, I will think about this championship a lot. Just, you know, it was like from a golf standpoint, it was just really fun as far as just like the matches that happened, the really great teams and players we got to see play against each other, and just how much drama was in each match. Like all of that was just really, really fun. So.
Memorable, gentlemen.
All right. So now to the tough part of the podcast. As many of you know, I've had coaches reach out, and you know, there's a lot of buzz going on, I guess, both at regionals and championships. You know, but we do have a bit of news that Golfstat for the 23-24 season and for the foreseeable future will no longer be the rankings and scoring provider for the NCAA. So there's a process that goes on where, you know, every three or so years, you know, the NCAA puts out an RFP or a bidding process for that contract. Golfstat has had it for 30 plus years consecutively at this point. And yeah, this time it just didn't work out in our favor. I will say that we didn't rest as far as like putting forth our best effort. You know, I kind of led that charge, so I do take that personal, and I felt there was a personal responsibility there. And I felt like we put together a really good proposal. I feel like in the last several years, we improved on a lot of things. But yeah, the feedback was that they wanted to go with something different, whether it be feedback from coaches or just the NCAA in general. I will say, just from a, you know, from a personal standpoint, it has definitely been tough because, you know, this has been my life for 7 years, you know, both good and bad, but it's been more good recently. Just to be a part of college golf, I felt like we were really building something. As far as just the things we were doing from a technology standpoint, obviously the podcast, and just kind of, you know, getting people excited about college golf. I think that's something we were doing really, really well. And we thought, you know, we would have some more time to continue to build that. I think it's very important to talk about, you know, the story of Golfstat a little bit, you know, and I won't go too far into it, but we've truly been through a lot. You know, when I first took the job 7 years ago, you know, Mark Lash passed away 2 months after I met him. You know, I always tell the story about, you know, so I, obviously ALS has really, have really had an impact on the Lash family. And when I met Mark, was kind of in his last days of ALS. But my first day of training, we had a ranking scenario that Mark wanted to try out on me and Allie at the time, where he would, you know, hey, what do you guys think about this? What, you know, with what you know about the rankings and what I've taught you so far. And for me, it kind of clicked, and I knew the rankings pretty well just based on what I learned from Mark. And I'll never forget it, because at that point for Mark, his body wasn't doing much, but his mind was as sharp as ever. Right. So he's in this wheelchair, not really able to do much. And when I kind of explained what my reasoning was for the scenario that he put forth, you could see it click for him, you know, and that was kind of like all I needed to know, that like I could do this thing. You know, there may be a future in this for me. This may be something that I would be really interested in. So like Mark really did impact my life and the Lash family in general. You know, you move from Brian from there, you know, he wanted to keep it going for you know, for the family, you know, never wanted to sell because it was a Lash thing. You know, Brian really believed in me as well and always saw that there was potential there. So, I mean, that part kind of sucks that, you know, their legacy may be coming to an end here. You know, I'm going to be for whatever's next. I honestly don't know what's next for me personally, and for Golfstat in general, because I mean, you guys can make the 1+1 equation that without an NCAA contract, it's going to be tough sledding around here, right? Like that's where the money comes from. So it's going to be interesting to see what the future of Golfstat is, but we will keep you posted when we know what that will be. I will say one thing, because I still do have Ian and Carolyn on, and they've heard it from me before, so this is nothing new. I think if there's anything that does really suck for me is when I got this opportunity to kind of not start from scratch, but to continue the Golfstat thing, in the Lash's name or whatever. You know, I had a vision for something really big, and I still think that vision was really positive, and I convinced both of them to join me and stop whatever they had going on to do that. And they've stuck with me for this year and a half, and they went full force, and they've done an awesome job. So for that to come to an end, I've known these two like for a while now, especially Carolyn here, and Ian a little bit earlier when I first started with Golfstat doing Palmer Cup when he was working with the GCAA, but both of them are family to me, and that will continue whether they like it or not. But to see that journey with us three from a work standpoint, at least at this point, somewhat come to an end much sooner than I was expecting, that part sucks because I think they did trust in me. And it just didn't work out. So in the meantime, we will keep you updated. I do not know if this is our last podcast. Knowing me, I'll probably get bored and want to record another one. So just be on the lookout for updates. If we have more podcasts, I may have some fun stuff over the summer. We will most likely still do live scoring this fall. So this may not be the last time, or championships may not be the last time you see a GolfStat logo or a leaderboard on our website. You know, we still plan to do live scoring this fall for the teams and schools and tournaments that want to use our service. We travel to 20 events that are not NCAA championships, and we still plan to go to those if we are lucky enough to be there. But yeah, things will be a little bit different moving forward. So I say all that to say thank you to everybody that has tuned in, that has supported us over the last, whether it be 7 years, 30 years, 2 years, 2 days, 2 months, whatever it is, we really do appreciate it. For me personally, both the Lash family and college golf have legitimately saved my life. So I can't say this whole journey has been a failure in general, because a lot of positive has come out of this for me, just personally and professionally. So until next time, whenever next time is, again, we really appreciate it. So follow us, rate us, review us, and we'll see you next time, if there is a next time. Peace.